And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Be the best and you gotta pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you gotta do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jerm Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Stu Jackson of therams.com. Stu, how we doing?
Doing pretty good, Jordan. Appreciate you having me on again. I think I'm fully recovered after watching that Jason Kelce retirement press conference. Believe it or not, even though I do cover and obviously work for the Rams, I do pay attention to a lot of other things happening in the NFL. And yeah, watching that was, man, that was something. And that's also a disclaimer or just a heads up for everybody listening that if Jordan's voice sounds a little bit different, it may have a little bit to do with that and nothing else, because it was obviously a really emotional press conference and a really cool moment in NFL history.
Sobbing profusely tends to affect one's voice, as does spending a week at the NFL Combine. Stu and I, we're recording this on Monday, March 4th. It's about 11 o'clock Pacific. Stu and I were supposed to record around 10:15, 10:30, and I texted him and I was like, I can't move from this Jason Kelce press conference. I'm a bawling mess. It was so beautiful. And Stu was like, yeah, I'm watching too. We're in the same boat. Like, we need to put this off a little bit. It was so beautiful. I think it was such a great reminder. And we both felt this with Andrew Whitworth's retirement speech as well a couple of years ago. It's so important that we continue to give these players a voice to talk about what the game means to them, how powerful it can move people. You also feel that real understanding of it is the most unique place in the world as an NFL locker room. And it's a unique space where so much of life happens from every range of potential and every diversity of background and thought. And there's so much bonding and love that happens in there with people who become, again, lifers with each other. And I thought he really explained that beautifully. I started losing it when he talked about how he can't explain how, I'm going to do it again, I'm sorry, he can't explain why he loves football so much. And then he went on to say it's one of those unexplainable things, and described why, a favorite book, a favorite song. And I was like, oh, F, like, I'm going to need to sit down. That's about when I texted you. So, but thank you, Stu, for joining me. I know that you share a lot of that feeling, and we're in a locker room every single day. And so we see it firsthand, but I think sometimes when we're in it, we forget that it's not a normal thing. It's a very abnormal thing. And as we head into this new season, this new league year, which starts next week for the Los Angeles Rams, as well as the rest of the NFL, it was a really good reminder of how incredible and what it is that we get to do and what it is we get to see and how precious that is. Even on the hard days where we have to say, you know, talk about things that aren't pleasant or good. But luckily for the Rams, sounds like things will be pleasant and good heading into free agency, about $40 million, give or take, you know, what they're going to allot to draft capital, heading into the start of the new league year, which is next week. They've already kind of started making some moves, some maneuvering a little bit, Stu. DeMarcus Robinson, I mean, that is a one-year deal worth, a source told me, up to $5 million. So that's going to be incentive heavy. That's a typical veteran deal that you would give to somebody who you value and think will, especially as DeMarcus did down the stretch, reach out and earn that money because of his contributions on the field. And you know, I was talking to some coaches this off season, Stu, and it was really cool hearing about how much belief that building has in DeMarcus and how much he ingratiated himself to teammates with how he did on the scout team and played any position they asked on that scout team. And then after the bye, people in that building started scratching their heads and going, why the hell isn't DeMarcus in our offense more? And so then they started building real plans for him, and I think we really saw a gift with DeMarcus in how he works out of structure. Obviously, his entire career, wherever he's been, he's learned that about quarterbacks. It's not necessarily something you think about with Matthew Stafford, but this last year it was. And DeMarcus showed a real creativity out of structure and after the concepts would break down a little bit. And Matthew Stafford would go full skinny Stafford and kind of get on the move a little bit and move the launch point. And I think that was really fun to see. And you just saw his veteran savviness show up. And, you know, DeMarcus is, to me, in my opinion, really solidified as the wide receiver three on this team, you know, pending, you know, all things, how they ended equally last season. He's I think, really solid option as a wide receiver three.
Yeah, he absolutely earned that. I agree, Jordan. And I mean, you just look at the production he had down the stretch in the second half of the season, the way he was getting open and just being a friendly target for Stafford, as you mentioned, especially on those out of structure passes. It was really cool to see that get rewarded, honestly. And it's the first semblance of, you know, stability he's had, I think, since being on the Chiefs, because obviously he was there for quite a bit. You know, went to the, I think it was the Ravens before.
He's a Ravens Chiefs guy. Yeah.
Before he eventually latched on with the Rams. And so I'm sure this is really rewarding for him, knowing that, you know, he was a summer signing last offseason. I mean, it was one of those, you know, kind of not under the radar moves, just because, again, like it was a move that was made not in like the big waves of free agency, when a lot of people are typically, you know, most gravitated toward that part of the calendar year, the NFL calendar, I should say. But most definitely, I mean, just getting open and being a friendly target, doing all the right things that made it easy to earn Stafford's trust, and you know, sets up that wide receiver room to have some really solid continuity after some of the you know, changes and departures and whatnot over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I, even with them making this move, the Rams, wide receiver, and we're going to talk about running back next, but wide receiver and running back is a position they will continually look to invest in, regardless of the status of sort of the top of that depth chart. It is zero surprise that they constantly roll through every single year, whether it's interest in the draft, interest in free agency, which is coming up here shortly. This is a team that, because of the way that they play, the amount of 11 personnel they run, the way that these receivers are fully integrated into the pass and the run game, they don't like subbing. It is something that they will always invest in this way. And similar to, so, you know, you'll see names pop and things like that. It is draft season after all. You'll see things get real buzzy, whether it's draft or free agency, teams being interested in X, Y, or Z player, no pun intended, receiver positions. thank you, Stu. I appreciate you. I see you laughing back there.
Yep, I saw where that was going.
It is always something that they will be looking at every single year. This is not a surprise. So I wouldn't be shocked at all to see them continue to build out that room, not just for what 2024 will look like, but you're now starting to have to think of what will life be like post Cooper Kupp at some point. And, you know, and the NFL lifespan comes for us all at a certain point. And I say this with as much respect as possible, but you have to think about that. You have to think about Tuju Atwell entering a contract here, someone who you can see the potential there, but really outside of a gadget role, has really just not become that wide receiver three that DeMarcus became at the end of last season. And you see the potential. So you have to think about that. You're thinking about the wear and tear that Puka playing the position the way he does takes on his body. You think about how DeMarcus is a vet on a one-year deal. So you really have to think, when you're planning at those skill positions, 2 to 3 years in advance, not just for the year in front of you. And similar to running back, I mean, Kyren Williams is a superstar, right? Nobody's arguing that. Ronnie Rivers, who was tendered a couple weeks ago by the Rams as an exclusive rights free agent, that was a pretty obvious move, considering he's a really solid number two. He's great in the pass game. He's a good blocker. He's a very, very, I say this, he's like a courageous runner. That's like how I would describe him. He's willing. He's courageous. He understands the scheme. He works really well with Ron Gould. This was a no-brainer.
Special teams.
Special teamer. Yeah. Someone who's going to be a core four for them coming into this new year, where they have to dramatically improve on teams. Good point, Stu. And you know, it's obvious. However, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't or won't continue to invest in that position, most likely in the middle to later rounds of the draft. And with those very late summer veteran pickups, training camp veteran pickups, a la Royce Freeman, Sony Michel, that was a little bit of a surprise with the retirement. But those are the team, they have showed you their pattern. There's no reason to believe that just because they have a ton of money now that they will deviate from that pattern at certain positions, and receiver and running back are certainly two positions that they'll continue to invest in.
Well, until they're not a predominantly 11 personnel team, which I don't even know when that
we won't
day
be
will
here
ever
anymore
come.
When
yeah,
that team
yeah,
comes,
right. Yeah, yeah.
We'll be long
that's
gone.
So far down the road, I have no idea when that would come. Yeah, exactly. But it's like you said. I mean, among the many lessons that you know that this team took away from the 2022 season, besides the importance of depth and continuity at offensive line, I think you also looked to at depth at receiver and running back, and just the way that you know that ended up taking shape last offseason and into the season. And so it's like you mentioned, it's like reinvesting in those positions and planning for the future is always a smart thing to do, but especially when you have as recent of an example as, again, now even though we're almost a couple of years removed from that season now, it's still recent enough that it's going to, you know, inform and influence your strategy, especially in this next window here.
Yeah. And there's a lot of changes that have unfolded over the last couple of weeks. We've had a small hiatus at 11 personnel working out some logistics things. Excited to share those things with you guys over the next couple of weeks. But we also needed a little bit of a break, I think. The voice just goes. So thanks everyone for your patience. But there's been so many changes in this building, whether it was Raheem Morris getting a well-deserved job, head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, which we did talk about previously, but also, understanding that if he were going to get a job, the Rams were incredibly informed and in the loop. Like any departure will force you to do. They were in the loop on who he would probably take with him, being Zach Robinson, KJ Black, and Nick Jones went with him as well. Two really promising rising offensive assistants in the quarterbacks and offensive line rooms, respectively. Assistant strength coach John Griffin, who I've heard nothing but great things. You know, in talking with him, he's been great, but you always listen for what other people are saying about how he does his job. Outstanding young strength coach, Justin Lovett. Really, I think, is building quietly a pretty superstar building a la Reggie Scott, how we've always known Reggie has been able to do. And taking people with him, and then Jake Peets leaves for Seattle. Nick Cayley, by come hell or high water, tooth and nail, Sean McVay was able to keep Nick Cayley in the building. He had a lot of interest, very, very strong interest from New England to return. So he's going to be the new passing game coordinator. And they made a bunch of actual outside hires and one big internal promotion. So let's start with the promotion, Stu. And by the way, what I was saying about Raheem Morris and the knowledge of what he would do, just want to reiterate I know that this is like, oh my God, every freaking year, it's like the revolving door of like Sean's losing assistants and all this stuff. Well, when a coach gets a head coaching job, a coach on your staff gets a head coaching job, one of the things they ask you to do in those interviews is to, and they start building a materials list for coaching candidates. Probably about December, you start hearing, oh, so-and-so is assembling a staff, and it's not them directly, it's their people. So agencies and stuff. So that they stay focused on what's on task, which is winning football games. Their agencies and stuff, they'll start building out staff lists, engaging interest from other teams and other assistants on other teams. They'll start really kind of like doing market research, stuff like that. And so by the time the coach is actually interviewing for a potential head coaching job somewhere, the Rams also have that list of people who this person is saying, hey, Arthur Blank, if I get this job, this is who I'd like to bring with me. Well, the Rams also have that list. So it's not like they were just totally caught unprepared. I mean, you heard them, on the soapboxes, and deservedly so, about Raheem Morris through the entire offseason. So it's not like they were caught on the back foot on any of this. I think that where you now have to navigate is it's hard if teams hear that Sean McVay wants to hire you, it is hard to keep that quiet. And that builds sort of an automatic market, I guess I would say, for those coaching free agents. And the bidding war sort of comes up. And, you know, Stu, we see this every year. It's like, if you, it's not enough to just have a cup of coffee with Sean McVay or stand in an elevator with him. If he actually wants to hire you, oh no, you better keep that quiet because another team's going to come out and try to get you. And agents know that. So it's a whole mess that time of year. Anyway, it's something that they navigate every year. They're prepared for it. That was the point that I was trying to make. However, the internal promotion, Chris Shula, when I was in Indianapolis this week, I talked to a lot of defensive coaches who the main thing that came that they were impressed with, I don't think that a lot of people know exactly what this is going to look like, other than it will be a continuation of the scheme that the Rams were already running. And that, you know, Chris Shula has worked a lot with the pass rush coordination, as well as the inside linebackers, worked some with the secondary, but he also has roots in that like wild, cool, matchy match zone, John Carroll stuff back in the day. So I'm eager to see what it will look like. We don't know yet. I will say what I did hear from a lot of different coaches, defensive coaches, especially I talked to this last week in Indianapolis, was, the idea that Chris, like, he's got a famous last name, right? We know this. The Shula family is iconic in football. But the thing I kept hearing was, oh, Chris wouldn't even tell you like who he was related to, or he would like to, wouldn't even, you know, he never used his name. He never threw it around. He kind of like, we love this word. He kind of lurked, you know, like he kind of lurked around different position rooms and tried to learn a lot of things and tried to be on the, like, behind the scenes element of it, became one of Sean's most trusted advisors, as well as a close friend of his. And he never sort of threw his weight around in that regard. That last name could have gotten him an interview in any building, regardless, as we know, the NFL loves names, right? And regardless of his experience or earlier in his career, lack thereof, throwing around that name could have gotten him somewhere. But instead, he decided to actively work his way up a different way. And just the coaches that I talked to probably a dozen defensive coaches around the league while in Indy. And there was a lot of respect for that. I was curious. I was like, hey, what do you think the Rams are going to run? Like, what do you think the scheme is going to look like? And aside from some of those interesting conversations, which I'll keep more private, that was something that kept shining through. And I think that was something that Chris really came out strong and talked about, Stu, in his press conference a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's a great segue for that. Like, he mentioned that, you know, anywhere he went, whatever coaching stop he had or was at, he wanted it to be based on merit and not just because of his last name. And so, you know, that legacy is something that he basically grappled with for the better part of his coaching career, at least early on. And it, I mean, sounded like it wasn't until, you know, fairly recently. I mean, I don't know how he would define recent as far as how far back he kind of, you know, came to realize, like, yeah, this is like a pretty special lineage to be a part of. And, you know, this family, and, you know, this is, you know, something that I'm, you know, proud to be a part of, that he's, you know, just now kind of taking that approach and that mindset with, which, I mean, I totally get it. I mean, because the last, you know, basically what he was getting at is, you know, the last thing he wants for, you know, is getting an opportunity just because of, you know,
because the N in NFL stands for Nepo Baby.
Right. And so, you know, that was, you know, something that I think really, really struck me is, you know, he kind of realizes now that, like, you know, it's okay to, you know, have pride in that and not be reluctant to share mm-hmm. that or anything like that. And kind of knowing that he's, you know, kind of stewarding this legacy or, you know, helping carry it forward, which I think is pretty cool.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. Again, they're not on the field yet. They're talking, all their meetings right now are concept, philosophy, and draft. One thing I do think stands out about Chris over his time with the Rams is the dude can find safeties. I mean, he was in charge. He was like him and Matt Waugh in pro scouting. They were in charge of a lot of that safety identification, especially in the later rounds in an undrafted free agency. So Chris, a lot of the real leaders on this team that have come through here over the last couple of years, the John Johnsons, the Jordan Fullers, emerging into the Quentin Lakes, Chris Shula helped find those guys, was a leader alongside Matt Waugh in finding those guys. So, he's done a lot of the work. He's very invested and integrated into the draft process. I think that is a strong point for the Rams going into this draft. Continuity of evaluation and language is super important when your coaching staff turns over like that. So I think that's going to be a kind of a quiet, very strong element that was important to retain. And there's some other interesting positional shifts. Giff Smith, who has a cool backstory and a very, very strong recommendation with Eric Henderson, who's now at USC. Giff Smith is now the defensive line coach. Joe Coniglio retains his spot as the outside linebackers coach. Aubrey Pleasant, it was huge for the Rams to retain Aubrey Pleasant. He was also a candidate for that defensive coordinator job. And then you've got a couple of people over on the offensive side who are new. I call him Stretch, so I can never pronounce it on the front side, Stu. But the Rams' new game management coordinator sounds like he will be really, really important. You hope Sean uses him and actually invests in fully with this. This is new for the Rams to have a legitimate, dedicated to game management rules, finding advantages and small leverages. They've always had people who do this behind the scenes. I've talked about this on this show in the past, but to actually be in the coach's ear through the entire game and to have specific dedicated meetings. Sounds like Sean sort of let it slip that Wednesdays will be the meetings where they go over rules. We saw in the Super Bowl, that's probably pretty significant to know the rules before you come upon them in a live situation where you have to make a decision under a lot of stress. I almost said under a lot of stretch, but that's where he will come in as well. There's a lot of new hires and a lot of really interesting staff developments. By the time we're talking about this, this is all old news to you guys, obviously. But we've been on a little bit of a hiatus. So we're just doing a little bit of a refresher here. And then heading into Indianapolis, myself and Jeremy Fowler of ESPN reported that a potential Sean Desai hire is in the works. The Rams do intend to hire him. However, obviously these things take some time to officialize and formalize, but if and when that becomes official and formal, he'll be in an offensive role as a defensive coach. This is similar to what Jimmy Lake did. A lot of tendency breakdowns, a lot of helping the offensive staff understand defensive rules, which is what made Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan's system so dominant in the first place, was a deep and technical understanding of defensive rules so that you can use your own offensive planning to exploit and manipulate those rules, knowing that it's hard for a defense to deviate from those rules. Who am I forgetting, Stu? I know I'm forgetting somebody on this staff here that's important. I know I'm forgetting someone to talk about here.
I was going to say, if you are, I'm in the same boat, because I think that's pretty
feels
pretty
like
well
so
covered.
Long
I mean,
ago now.
Yeah, I mean, I know that from being at Rams Reveal Live and listening back to COO Kevin Demoff's appearance on ESPN LA, you know, he did mention Nate Shieldhouse.
Yes, Nate Shieldhouse. Yeah. Yes.
I hope I got his last name pronounced that correctly just now. But mentions him as kind of someone who's you know, a rising star. And obviously, if you're somebody that that McVay tabs out of the coaching ranks that he hasn't worked with before, at least in an NFL or professional capacity, that's got to be pretty promising, or shows mm-hmm. how highly I would say that you're thought of. But yeah, it's a really fascinating staff. And the one I guess that really stuck out to me was Giff Smith. I know you touched on him a little bit, but seeing what he's done with Joey Bosa and yeah. Khalil Mack, and the production he's gotten out of the edge position, especially, which at least, depending on who you read and what you watch, maybe is, viewed as a potential area of need for the Rams heading into free agency or the offseason. And from a continuity standpoint, too, I mean, obviously there's the Eric Henderson connection, but he actually overlapped with Shula when he began his coaching career with the Chargers mm-hmm. Many years ago. And so
it's kind of a mentor figure to Shula. I think that's really important to have for Chris right. Shula entering this role, as somebody who can mentor him, a young coach in a new role. And Giff Smith, it sounds like, has been that person for a lot of different defensive coaches who have really become, prominent names, such as Eric Henderson, such as, hopefully, as he's hoping Chris Shula will be.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing with that, too, is, I mean, obviously the defense the Chargers ran isn't a one-to-one comparison of what the Rams have been running in recent years, but it's still that Fangio Staley umbrella. And so there's familiarity there with what Shula is probably going to run. I mean, he didn't sound like there were going to be wholesale changes, but obviously he may tweak this a little bit to suit whatever vision he feels like is best for the players or personnel that he has at his disposal. But anyway, just thinking about all of those connections, that was one of the new additions that really came to top of mind, just thinking about familiarity with scheme
yeah.
and other members of the coaching staff and how it really makes a lot of sense as far as, for as much turnover as you're going to have on the staff, especially on the defensive side, trying to keep continuity in place there.
Yeah. And you mentioned, depending on the players they have, a couple of pointed comments actually from Les Snead on his, during his press conference, last week as the combine was unfolding. Obviously the Rams, top brass, they do not attend the combine. There are a couple of people who do go. I'll get more into that in the second half of this podcast. But the, Les Snead and Sean McVay do not attend and haven't since 2020. And, a lot of coaches this year actually and GMs weren't there or were there for like a day and then left. So super interesting trend here. I could go down a total rabbit hole and ramble about that for an hour, as you know, Stu, because I've done it in front of you before. I won't do that now, but Stu's like laughing his ass off on the Zoom screen, by the way. Some pointed comments. We mentioned players, we asked about a lot of upcoming free agents, a lot of players who the Rams are currently in talks with their representation, and been in communication with to try to get something done. When we are talking about the defense, I did think the most pointed thing on the defensive side that Les did say was, I asked him directly about like, hey, what did you make of your corners last year? Because we know that position outside of Akello struggled a little bit. That position was, it rotated a lot. There were some bumps in the road for some of those younger guys. There were some injury situations. Akello was dealing with a groin injury late in the year as well, but didn't miss time. You know, and Les, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but he was pretty as direct, about as direct as he gets, still not succinct, but about as direct as he gets, which is like, hey, we didn't have much of a pass rush. We struggled rushing the passer. And when you have to cover for a long time because you're not consistently rushing the passer, your corners are going to look worse than they actually are. Now, in my opinion, they still need a corner over 6 feet tall in that room. That's a big problem to me. At the same time, I multiple things being true, that's the first one of the new league year. I would agree with him that there was a lot of issues with that pass rush, which popped statistically in some ways, but was not a complete rush throughout the majority of the season. And they need a pass rusher. And to me, a question about cornerbacks suddenly turning into a conversation about pass rushing pointed more directly to the priority list than a lot of other comments that Les Snead made. Now, the other one that pointed really directly and strongly to priority list, which you mentioned before, Stu, is the offensive line. And Les noted that he and Coleman Shelton's representatives are in consistent talks. Coleman Shelton voided his final year in his contract. Will hit the free agency market. Now, what that could look like is an extension if the Rams are able to get something done. It really depends on the price there with Coleman. They would like to get him back, but it really will depend on what his market actually looks like. And then Kevin Dotson. And Stu, I know that you and I have both been covering this pretty closely and keeping an eye on those markets. What were your takeaways from what Les said about Coleman Shelton and Kevin Dotson?
Yeah, kind of like what you mentioned, just, you know, the consistent communication being there. And, you know, really the first time that he mentioned, also kind of like you just covered, that, you know, this could be a situation where they really need to, you know, let them go into the free market to figure out a number that makes sense for both sides. Now, when I think myself and a lot of other people tweeted that out from the Zoom presser, you know, seeing some comments not indicative of all the ones that I saw, but some were like, oh, well, why would they let them walk? That's ridiculous. It's like, well, no, Les is saying that it's not them not necessarily them letting them walk. It's just they may have to, you know, shop around here.
Yeah, they may get priced out. Yeah.
Right. To get a clear picture of what their market is and what the prices in the case of both of them that, you know, they might have to work with. And so it was pretty interesting to me too that, you know, Les also said, you know, with Dotson, it may go all the way into the, you know, the early period, referring to March 11th. Those who aren't familiar.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it's sometimes, you know, externally called the, you know, legal tampering period, whatever. Basically it's those 2 days before the start of the new league year, 2.5 days really, where, you know, teams can start reaching out to representatives of players who are going to become unrestricted free agents. And so, you know, he said that it could go into that period with Dotson specifically. And I, you know, potentially, I guess Coleman too, with the way he was making it sound with both of those guys and the free market and whatnot. And so, I would urge people not to panic, you know, hearing that, or you know, just to, like, actually watch the full presser and his full comments, because, like, ultimately it's just another step in, you know, the negotiation process and figuring out, you know, things from here with both of those guys.
Yeah. And you don't want to, we've seen this happen to the Rams before. You don't want to get into a situation where you're drafting directly for need at a very specific position. That's what happened with Logan Bruss. A couple of years ago, they really, really needed to fill that position because they weren't able to do anything in free agency and limited financially in what they could allocate toward that position. Now, the other thing, and so you don't want to see that. You want to be drafting best player available. A lot of those players are centers and guards and tackles, especially around the Rams have several top 100 picks this year. So a lot of those pick points are reflective of a very, very positive strength in the draft. But you don't want to get into sort of desperation mode where you have to fill that spot. And, you know, I'd say on the outside of things, it's been, I think, widely discussed that Kevin Dotson should have a pretty strong market. The Rams will have a number, and there's going to be a number that they're not willing to cross, because even though they have, you know, the 30 to 40 million in usable cap space, that doesn't mean all of it should or can get allocated toward one player. And it also means that even though they have this money, a lot of what they've also been talking about is how much they learned from being pretty disciplined last year. I would say the year before was an example of what not to do, which was let a player string out into the deeper parts of that first wave of free agency without the team being clear on what he is going to do. This was the Von Miller situation. And then all of a sudden getting that sort of rubber band effect where, you know, the player decides to sign with another team for a huge amount of money. Okay, well, a major pool of money that the Rams had allocated toward that player now opens up. Okay, go spend it, right? Well, I spent it on the wrong players. So it's like, you know, there was a huge lesson to be learned in the last 2 years for this team about managing, not just expectations, but managing and being disciplined in free agency in some ways, but also investing in and rewarding players who you believe in, who are in-house, like Kevin Dotson now can be qualified as someone who is in-house for this team. Coleman Shelton certainly is. So they know every single bit of every molecule in their bodies because of their sports science, and they have a body of data on them and lots of tape from practice and games. And they know what they know about these players, right? It can be a little dicey signing guards from the outside in. You hear that a lot. You hear GMs and pro personnel people talk about that a lot. That position, it can be a little fickle in terms of signing someone from the outside in, extending from the inside out, again, no pun intended. That is something that can work out very well for teams at those interior offensive line spots. Kevin Dotson and Coleman Shelton being two of those players. Now, at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can be a little bit too fast and loose with the money allocation. You have to stick to a number. This is a number that will have been communicated by now to Kevin Dotson's representation, will have been communicated by now through that representation to a lot of other teams. Even though everyone says it's not, tampering isn't actually happening until the tampering window opens, that is not true. It is happening pretty much all year round by all 32 teams in the league having discussions with representation and kind of getting a gauge on what, you know, the NFL looks like and what salary structures are. So this is something where it certainly bears monitoring. It could have a huge effect on how the Rams draft at both of these positions. They are lucky this year in that if they lose one or both, there's a significant amount of talent in this draft class at both those positions and at tackle. At the same time, the Rams have, as we know, other needs elsewhere, and you want to make sure you're kind of able to play your draft board free and really go toward best players available. And that starts in free agency is being able to retain certain players. And I would also say that, there's decisions to be made all over this roster. Some of the more quiet ones, obviously Akella Witherspoon and John Johnson, Les Snead said that they would test the market, but they have had discussions with their representatives. The Ernest Jones, he's not a free agent, but the Ernest Jones potential contract extension is something that kind of keeps buzzing around as well. Jordan Fuller, captain and starting safety, who had an unfortunate injury at the very end of last season. The Rams, they really usually let all their safeties test free agency. I keep hearing the safety market is weird this year, and kind of always it has been for a few years, but we kept hearing at the combine from different agents that the safety market is really hard to predict this year, but he'll test the market. Just all of these moving parts. And so basically all of this is to say there's a lot that could still happen and a lot of conversations that still need to be had and I's dotted and T's crossed. And so with this team, what we've usually seen is like a little bit of a spike in panic. I love you guys so much, but a little bit of a spike in panic during that first wave of free agency. And then things settle in and the Rams can quietly often identify, some acquired players who could really be good role players for them. And then, I kind of start this period next week, Stu, but I extend it all the way up till the trade deadline. When the Rams are operating as normal, this period starts next week, but it does not stop in my mind until all the way up to the trade deadline.
It's like Les said in his Zoom availability last week during Combine Week that, hopefully there's nothing, too crazy as far as, the approach or any, ideas that him and, McVay may have, at any point during the offseason. But he did say that there's an element to both of their DNAs that, they're willing to go for the gold medal. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he did mention
you have to with Les.
But he did mention going for gold as far as like, that aggressive approach and kind of like what I wrote about on Friday. It's also been mentioned too that, the Rams are kind of back into that position of being able to take those big swings if they so choose based on, draft and salary cap resources. But as you did a great job of outlining just now, there are quite a few dominoes that have to fall or be settled before, the picture, I think, becomes a little bit clearer.
Yeah, well said, Stu. Thank you so much, by the way, for joining me today. I am going to stay behind here. We're going to keep recording for this episode of 11 Personnel because there are some other things. I've got to let Stu go. He's got a very busy day ahead. But there are a couple of other things that we do need to discuss on this podcast episode. But in the meantime, Stu, it's great to see you, man. Oh my God. I feel like it's been so long, even though it's been what, 2-3 weeks since I last saw you, but it feels like it's been forever.
Yeah. Well, I only go to the combine if McVay and Snead are both there. And since the coaching staff turnover has, led them to staying behind more routinely, so have I, stayed behind in Indianapolis. And so, it has been quite a while, but, before we know it, OTAs will get underway and we'll be getting a closer look at, all of the players and obviously the, new additions to the coaching staff and whatnot. And, won't be long here before we're back in Thousand Oaks again, with all those observations and insights and takeaways and such.
Yeah, it'll be a super fun off season, I think. And it'll be fun to see again, they've got resources this year. They've especially got draft resources. They've certainly got a healthy amount of salary cap. So it's going to be fun. Keep the Rams weird 2024. That's always, we said it in 23 and they were weird as hell, but it was super fun to watch. So we're going to carry that into, got a great message from a reader as well. It's officially hashtag not my plan season. So it's when we communicate the plan without taking ownership of said plan. So, where to not direct your anger to, if you are angry. I think this is all going to be fun and, we'll see what happens the next couple weeks. Stu and I will be here to break down a lot of it for you. Go read Stu's work at therams.com. And Stu, I'm sure be bugging you soon, to hop back on. So in the meantime, thank you so much for joining today.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. Always appreciate it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, guys, I'm back. Thank you to Stu Jackson for joining me. At one point, we'll start filming these. We don't now because a lot of times when we're a lot of times I'm doing this kind of solo, trying to get all of these things logistically sorted. And all of a sudden I recognize that I in no way, shape or form look camera ready as we're talking. So, but I wish you guys could see some of Stu's laughter. His entire body was shaking with laughter over a couple of things. But he's the best. We appreciate you, Stu Jackson from therams.com. If you're not following him already on Twitter, which you probably are, if you listen to this show, make sure you go do that. And we'll both have a lot of breakdowns and primers and little logistical things heading into free agency. I did want to get him out of here because I did not want to put Stu in a bad place or in a bad spot, because we have to talk about a couple of other things that have come up on the Rams radar over the last couple of weeks. And then also are certainly on my radar after coming back from a very productive week at the NFL Scouting Combine. Hilariously, though, if you do the combine, there are two ways to do the combine, as we know. And those of you guys listening to me, you know I'm a lurker. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that this is one of my favorite things to go to, because you hear so many things and you talk to so many people, and a lot of that informs your coverage for the next couple of months. So as you'll remember, there was a clear identity and vision from the Rams emerging out of the 2022 season. That was a little bit hard to swallow for, I think, a lot of fans, but the identity was there. Talked to enough people in Indianapolis, whether the quiet behind the scenes, very under the radar personnel that do show up for the Rams, or whether it's league sources, agents, coaching agents, people around the league, other coaches. It's a fascinating time of year to try to figure out what the identity of the team that you cover is going to be the following year. And that is why I go to the combine, which is hilarious because there's a lot of also really cool things happening in the, you know, in the shape of drills and player workouts and timers and stopwatches and arguing with people over why the 40-yard dash is not as relevant as it used to be. And excuse the car alarm in the background also. But you could do it one of two ways. If you're a draft head, you can definitely go cover it that way. And a lot of people do it an extraordinarily amazing job doing that. I'm going to shout out our Dane Brugler, Nick Baumgartner, Deontay Lee. Nate Tice is absolutely one of my favorite draft analysts, especially at the quarterback position. He has a couple of prospects to pros episodes with Dane Brugler, who is an absolute legend in the NFL draft community. His massive, like, 1,000-page draft manual called The Beast, we release it every year. That's coming out soon. He'll have a bunch of mock drafts coming out that I'll react to and sort of analyze over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully we can get him on the show. Every time I ran into him in Indianapolis, I reminded him to drink water. So I guess on brand for me. But I was running around a little bit more behind the scenes. I was talking to league sources, to scouts and personnel people, agents, coaches, and really trying to get an understanding of a couple of other projects that I'm working on first and foremost, but also a little bit better picture, clearer picture of where things are at with the Rams right now. That leads to a little bit more, I think, buzzy topics. And one of them that I think is a bit of a just something to watch. I don't think panic levels should necessarily raise yet. But something to watch is this Aaron Donald situation, because teams are navigating what their financial structures will look like heading into free agency. I do think that this Aaron Donald situation externally seems like a question mark with people who are watching what the Rams are doing or trying to gain insight on where they will allocate their money. And this is something that does bear monitoring, because we went from, at the end of the season, Aaron Donald speaking to us in the locker room post game after the wild card loss in Detroit, and expressing his commitment to rolling things back again with a group of young players who he really thoroughly enjoyed working around this year. At the same time, he is entering what's technically a contract year for him. As you'll remember, he contemplated retiring after the Super Bowl 2021 season into spring of 2022. And the Rams signed him to a 3-year extension, a really significant contract extension. A reminder, it contains a no trade clause. So I'm saying that I'll probably repeat it to the point of annoyance to a lot of people. Every year, people seem to forget this. Aaron Donald will not be traded unless he okays being traded. And even then, I mean, I'm not even saying this is a hypothetical. I'm just saying that's what a no trade clause is. The player has to agree to be traded, has approval of, you know, all kinds of things, including the team at baseline, and then all kinds of salary structure, those types of things. So not saying that's a hypothetical. I'm just saying he has a no trade clause. People seem to really forget this, especially this time of year. And so just throwing that out there as a polite reminder. It's an interesting position because, you know, if he is on the roster at the, you know, 5 days into the league year, this was reported by Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk, who often can get a look at these contracts, and then on Over the Cap, that's a $30 million guarantee for Aaron for 2024, which is a significant amount of money, but you also have to remember he's going into a contract year. He had one of the best still to this, you know, at 32, he had one of the best seasons of his career, although sack statistics didn't always show it in the shorter term, but pressure rate and double team rate and triple team rate and all of those things, especially with who he was playing with around him. And also, you know, late in the year, the emergence of Kobe Turner really helped. But for a lot of this year, it was Aaron and a bunch of other guys. And, you know, credit to those young guys, Byron Young and Kobe Turner, for really developing. And they look like they're going to be bona fide dudes for a long time for this team. But, you know, it was tough sledding at first, I think, for Aaron Donald. And still was managing to produce that rush the way that he does and only he can. But he's got two void years on the end of this previous extension that he signed. So those basically exist to like hold money if you need to. And they're not structured. They're not like structurally there to mark a period of time. So this is the last year on his 2024 is his contract year. We've referred to it all the time as the Aaron Donald contention window. You know, set up in 2023, be ready to contend again in 2024, the last year of Aaron's deal. So this situation bears monitoring. There's a lot of the way that it works right now is agents who represent players, whether on the Rams or not on the Rams, all over the league are trying to figure out where every team is at in terms of their financial resources and how much money they could potentially be willing to allocate toward their client. Now, this is standard for every team across the league. This example obviously relates to the Rams, Aaron Donald, and some of those other free agents. So that's why I explain it here. So there's a lot of chatter about what's going to happen. What's he going to do? Every year we've talked about the possibility of retirement with Aaron because he himself contemplated retirement after that Super Bowl. So at his age, with all he's accomplished and his legacy, it's just going to be a question until he flat out overtly turns it down. He seemed to turn this down at the end of the year in the locker room when we talked to him. However, Sean McVay and Les Snead have been less clear. They've been a little bit more gray matter on whether they've spoken to Aaron about this, what Aaron has expressed to them. There was also a significant departure if you're the Rams and Aaron Donald. One of his best friends, his favorite coach, a mentor of his and somebody who he game planned with every week, Eric Henderson, is now coaching at USC. Sean McVay was pretty non-committal about whether that would impact Aaron's decision. Another little bit of a, I don't want to say red flag, but like pink flag, I guess it was, like that Chris Shula had not spoken with Aaron when he took the DC job. I say pink flag because this is always what happens this time of year. The Rams just let players and certain coaches just like leave them alone, like get some peace, get some rest, be with your family, do what you do. And so that's been typical with Aaron every year. So that could be an element to this. However, the fact that he's going into technically a contract year, the fact that he's still playing at a high level, and the fact that if he did walk away, a significant amount of money would be left on the table. However, he could also be in, and I'm not speaking for him, but just logistically, if you look at how this business works, he also could be wanting to have a little bit more on that contract. He could be wanting to have more time. He could be, there's all kinds of things that could be happening in terms of that conversation right now. But I will just say there was a lot of chatter about this. I'll write more about this into the week here. There were just a lot of questions from people who were trying to get a sense on how much the Rams can allocate certain players in free agency and where that money can go. Because once you establish that and then other significant potential allocations, like Stu and I talked about, everything else financially falls into place on the spreadsheet. But you have to know that. And I'll say too, that's significant. That is a huge swing. Let's say, and I think this would be Rams fans and Rams, you know, whatever, Rams fans worst case scenario here. Let's say he does walk away. That's a $30 million swing. That's a really massive recalibration and reallocation or not of not just the resources that you then need to kind of reset and reestablish in your system, but also schematically, what are you going to do? Draft-wise, you probably got to reset different parts of your board and your sheets. Free agency, you probably approach your own free agency a little bit different. So it's all kinds of things. The fact that there were questions into the combine about this and that the leadership publicly being less Snead was a little bit less gray or a little bit more gray on this situation. I do think it bears monitoring. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I do think it bears monitoring. The other thing I wanted to address is the NFLPA player survey. This is the second year that the NFLPA, the players union, has run this survey. This is something that I think can really spur some teams to action if they are embarrassed by certain elements of the survey. The Cardinals, for example, last year, absolutely atrocious grades and certain things that were not good that they then set about trying to fix into the spring and under Jonathan Gannon. Other teams, you know, you hear different things about the Jaguars. You hear different. So if certain things come to light, that's kind of the idea behind the survey, is to really vocalize player priorities and player needs. And I would encourage going to the NFLPA's website to read about how they poll and what they poll for and what time of year they poll and who participates in it, because I do think that that's important context to have. Where the Rams specifically factor in here is, you know, perennially, it's been 2 years. So back-to-back years, the Rams have scored very poorly on things relating to facilities. This is not really a surprise. Their buildings are falling apart. They should have been out of those trailers after year two or three. Instead, it's what, 7 years? You know, there's issues infrastructurally. They don't have enough space. They need more space for player communal areas and cafeterias. I would say that when you get outside and you're actually out doing football things, absolutely beautiful. Could not be more beautiful. Those fields are immaculate. The way that the operations staff and the turf and grass management team works on those facilities up in that area where you're hit with a lot of different types of climate, it's really impressive. But the facilities themselves, they do not have enough space. This team is one of the most cutting edge teams there is in terms of sports science and investing into strength and conditioning. Their weight room is not big enough. They just have a lot of issues, and it's all facilities based because they are in temporary facilities. They will be moving into new temporary facilities down in Woodland Hills by the start of next season. I would have to imagine they will expand the actual space, functional space. They worked with kind of what they had up at Kalu, who were great partners to them to do so. But I would imagine with a space that they own, a huge swath of land that they actually own, even though they're portables and temporary space, they'll actually like take some of this stuff to heart. So the coaching staff, the training staff, they scored high. That was basically what saved the Rams from being among the worst ranked teams, because how much the players appreciate the coach, the coaching staff, and the strength training staff, and the athletic training staff led by Reggie Scott. The thing that is a red flag, not a pink flag, but a red flag to me in a couple of different ways, and this is a multiple things can be true comment here for me, is that 2 years in a row, they've scored really bad marks on this category called treatment of families. Now, I poked around on this at the combine a little bit because I wanted to know like what other teams do in terms of logistics pertaining to families. You saw publicly some teams charge for daycare. The Rams do not. They provide game day daycare. The only two, we didn't get a lot of context about what players were actually voting on, what player feedback actually was, where the Rams were concerned within this very poorly marked area. We didn't have a lot of clarity on what that actually meant. So on that note, I will say that I wish there was more clarity provided by the survey and by the players who did participate in that survey about what that actually means, because it also sounded like Les Snead wasn't quite sure what that actually means or what the parameters were for that. When I talked to people around the league and I was asking, hey, if players give feedback about treatment of families, what does that really mean? Well, a lot of times that means, are there enough sideline passes? I think that the Rams, they, because of their footprint in Los Angeles, you see a lot of loading up the sidelines and the suites with celebrities and entertainers and TikTok people and all kinds of stuff. And that has its place for sure. But there was some commentary from other, this is not coming from the team themselves. Let me reiterate, it's coming from me sort of polling or picking the brains of people in other buildings. You know, sideline passes and also, you know, league sources who do sometimes attend games, you know, sideline passes, suite space, I think transportation to and from SoFi Stadium, as well as parking. That was something that got brought up as maybe something for me to follow up on as whether or not that is an issue. Because another team that I talked to, they had issues with parking. And so they got a poor grade and then they changed the parking and then they got a bet. So they said, okay, treatment of families could even mean stuff like that. And I do think that, that particular footprint and infrastructurally with the traffic and everything, sometimes you're just that just, I don't really know what to tell you. Like I've bitched and moaned about this a lot, being stuck in my car, like trying to get into SoFi and like walking, you know, just it's a huge footprint in a major city with hellacious traffic is basically what I'm saying. There's some things are unavoidable. However, I do encourage if anybody has more context from the player side, the agent side, the coaching family side, the support staff side, if anyone has more context that they can provide and would like to do so in a discreet manner, you can email me at jrodrigue@theathletic.com. It is something that has come up 2 years in a row. It is something that I've publicly asked Les Snead about, although it's not necessarily his department. That is more of, I think, a broader conversation for the organization as a whole versus just the football side. But I do think it's a conversation worth having. I do think it's a conversation that needs more clarity because if there are things that are not clear when voicing feedback, then action probably can't happen if it's not clear what direction action has to be taken. At the same time, the organization and I, as from what I hear, is doing this, but the organization needs to be soliciting that feedback, especially as they get readjusted still only a couple years in to what that game day experience might look like for families. So that said, guys, we're going to have a lot to talk about over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully I didn't scare anybody. Wasn't trying to do that. Was just trying to provide a 300-foot view of the situation. Had a really productive week lurking around at the combine. And I'm excited for a lot of those tidbits, notes, story ideas, storylines, connections with people, contacts, ideas to express themselves in the coverage over the next couple of weeks and months, Lord willing. And yeah, you guys, I appreciate coming back and talking with you guys. We're going to have maybe some new logistical announcements about this show coming up in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. Trying to be as transparent with you guys as possible, as always. In the meantime, if you have any questions, you know where to find me. A new league year, Keep the Rams Weird 2024 is beginning. And I hope you guys are taking care of each other. I hope you're taking care of yourselves. I hope you're staying hydrated. I hope you're staying caffeinated. And we'll catch you next time.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.